So today we're going to speak about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and especially we're going to read about the reasons for his appearance, especially the esoteric reasons for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. There's esoteric and exoteric reasons. So, Omaganati Mirandasha Gananjana Shlokaya Chakshur Miditam Yena Tuzmai Shigurveda Maha Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nichananda Jaya Dwaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nichananda Jaya Dwaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nichananda Jaya Dwaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Okay. So before we start speaking about Lord Chaitanya's appearance, we want to verify that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because nowadays in Kali Yuga, you find so many people, they declare themselves or their followers declare them as Krishna. So there's verses here, and also verses given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that verify that Lord Chaitanya is Krishna. So we're going to read a few of those verses here. This one is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, 8th chapter, text 13. And it's cited in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Asanvarnastrayo yasya grinato nu yagam tanahu shuklo raktastita pita idanim krishna tam gataha. This boy, that's referring to Krishna, because it's the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's actually Garga Muni speaking. Garga Muni, of course, is performing the name-giving ceremony for Krishna in secret, because they didn't want anyone to know that Krishna's great transcendental qualities, because they were afraid of Kamsa. So this boy, Krishna, has three other colors, white, red, and yellow, as he appears in different ages. Now he has appeared in a transcendental blackish color, because that's in reference to Krishna. And then in the Mahabharata, there's a very explicit verse delineating Lord Chaitanya's appearance. And I'll read that. Asuvarna varno hemangahu varngash chandanagati sanyasakritshama shanto nishta shanti Parayanaha. So, the translation is, in his early pastimes, he appears as a householder with a golden complexion. His limbs are beautiful and his body, smeared with the pulp of sandalwood, seems like molten gold. In his later pastimes, he accepts the sannyasa order and he is equipoised and peaceful. He is the highest abode of peace and devotion, for he silences the impersonalist non-devotees. That nishta shanta parayana. Very, very nice. So let me read Srila Prabhupada's purport, because it's interesting in this regard. This is a verse from the Mahabharata, as I mentioned before, the Dharma Vishnu Sahasra Nama Stotra. In his commentary on the Vishnu Sahasra Nama, called the Namarta Sudha Vida, Srila Baladeva Vijayabhushana, commenting upon this verse, asserts that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead according to the evidence of the Upanishads. He explains that Suvarna Varna means a golden complexion. He also quotes the Vedic injunction, Yada Pasha Pashyate Rukma Varnam Kartaram Isham Purusham Brahma Yonim. Rukma Varnam Kartaram Isham refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as having a complexion, the color of molten gold. Purusham means the supreme lord, and Brahma Yonim indicates that he is also the supreme Brahman. This evidence, too, proves that Lord Chaitanya is the supreme personality of Godhead Krishna. Another meaning of the description of the Lord as having a golden hue is that Lord Chaitanya's personality is as fascinating as gold is attractive. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan has explained that the word Varanga means exquisitely beautiful. Lord Chaitanya accepted sannyas, leaving aside his household life to preach his mission. He has equanimity in different senses. First, he describes the confidential truth of the personality of Godhead. And second, he satisfies everyone by knowledge and attachment to Krishna. He is peaceful because he renounces all topics not related to the service of Krishna. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan has explained that the word nishta indicates his being rigidly fixed in chanting the holy name of Sri Krishna. Lord Chaitanya subdued all disturbing opponents of devotional service, especially the manas, who are actually averse to the personal feature of the Supreme Lord. So these are some evidences we can give as to Lord Chaitanya's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, where's that verse? Here it is. Now we're going to talk about the reasons for Lord Chaitanya's appearance. Of course, we do know that... Where is this? Oh, I have that later on. And saved it. No. Give me a second. I'll find it in a second. What's that? No, I know where it is in the chapter. Here it is. Strange. Anyway, let's just back a little bit. Anyway, I can speak about it even if I can't find it. There's a very special verse that I was hoping to quote. Here it is. Here it is. So now we'll speak about the reasons for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's transcendental appearance. Of course, there's the esoteric and the exoteric reasons. Exoteric means reasons that can be understood by the common people. That means Lord Chaitanya appears as the Yuga avatar, to teach the Yuga Dharma. That's Krishna Nam Sankirtan. That's the exoteric reason. But as far as the esoteric reason, Lord Chaitanya has his own reasons for doing that. And Krishna has his own reasons for his appearing as Lord Chaitanya, and we'll read about that. So, reading from the fourth chapter of the Adi Lila, text 230. Shri Radaya Pranaya Mahima Kidrisho Vanayaiva Swadjo Yenad Bhuta Madhir Rima Kidrisho Vamadiyaha Sokyam Chasha Madanubavata Kidrisham Beti Lobat Tad Babadya Samad Jandhi Sachigarbha Sindhau Harindahu. So these are the three esoteric reasons for Lord Chaitanya's appearance. Desiring to understand the glories of Radharani's love, the wonderful qualities in him that she alone relishes through her love, and the happiness she feels when she realizes the sweetness of his love, the Supreme Lord Hari, richly endowed with her emotions, appears from the womb of Srimati Sachi Devi as the moon appears from the ocean. In other words, there's three basic esoteric reasons for Lord Chaitanya's appearance. One is he wants to understand Radharani's love. Why does he want to understand it? Because it's through her love that she can control Krishna. Like if someone, let's give an example, if someone actually can control you, you want to understand how they're doing it. Right? It's like all of a sudden if you find yourself like a puppet, you know, what's the technology they're using? So that's, you know, that's a theoretical understanding. And because Krishna is known as Madan Mohan, he's able to conquer over Cupid, or attract Cupid. And Radharani is known as Madan Mohan Mohini. That means she who attracts the attractor of Cupid. And one of the transcendental qualities of Srimati Radharani is she always keeps Krishna like wrapped around her little finger. Sometimes you say that when you're criticizing someone in this world. His wife always keeps him wrapped around her little finger. She controls him. And you know, it's pretty upsetting when you're dealing with someone like that who's controlled by their wife. Nothing against the women. But it's just, you know, it's upsetting because then you can't really interact with him. So, in the same way, Krishna is always controlled by Srimati Radharani. And so Krishna wants to understand, why is this? I mean, what does she have that she's always controlling me? So that's the first point. And then the second esoteric point is that Krishna is basically an egotist. That he understands he's beautiful. That's a fact. Krishna is the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. And sometimes, there's some stories like Krishna sometimes looks at a reflection of himself. Of course, they didn't have mirrors in those days. But in a river or a lake or something like that. And he says, who is this attractive person? Wow. So Krishna wants to see himself through the eyes of his beloved. And of course, you may say, this is a problem. This is egoism. But we have no problem with egoism. We have a problem with false egoism. Sometimes we were speaking with Mayavadis, and they say, well, you have to get rid of the ego. And, of course, their concept of getting rid of the ego is to get rid of the self. And we say, no, you get rid of the false ego, the false conception that I am the enjoyer, I am the proprietor. Ishwaroham, ahambogi, siroham, balavan suki. That I am the center of everything. But when Krishna thinks of himself as the enjoyer, the proprietor, he actually states that in the Gita, in Bhaktaram Jagatapasam, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram Suridam Sarva Bhutanam Gyatvamanam Mam Shanti Richati. He says, it's interesting, I'm going to contrast this a little bit, but he says, if you really want to be peaceful, you got to understand, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the proprietor, and the friend. And actually, we were meditating on the Ramayana. Ravana says the same thing. He said, you know, if you don't want me to kill you, then don't argue with me. I'm the enjoyer and the proprietor. And if you make me your friend, you'll be happy. So the demons also say like this. Whereas Krishna in reality is the enjoyer. He's the proprietor. He's the lord of all the worlds. And he's your best friend. Suridam sarva bhutanam. Gatva mam shanti mrichati. Ishwara sarva bhutanam. Hridesha arjuna tishtati. Brahmayan sarva bhutani yantra rudani bhaya. And also other things. Sarvasya chaham mani sanavishto matak smriti. Jnanam aponam chaham. So many verses. They talk about Krishna being in your heart. It's interesting. Because sometimes when you're talking about loving relationships, you say that he or she is in my heart. And you even get a locket with a little heart locket. So Krishna is actually, he's like that. He's in our heart locket. Krishna's in our heart. He's our friend. So So anyway, so for him to make those statements is not false ego because they're true. If it's not true, it's false. You understand the logic? If something is not true, it's false. So if someone makes a false statement, that's false ego. And if someone makes a true statement, that's true ego. For example, if I say I'm part and parcel of Krishna, that's true ego. That's not a false ego. But if I say I'm the enjoyer, I'm eternally a sannyasi or something like that, that's false ego. Or eternally an American or something. So, anyway, so Krishna, he has this ego, but it's not an ego problem. He wants to see himself from the eye through the eyes of his beloved. And then the third reason is that he looks and sees that Radharani is enjoying more than he is. So he's thinking, why does she get all the enjoyment? She's enjoying. I'm the supreme enjoyer. But here is someone who's enjoying more than me. And actually, that's a fact. Like Prabhupada would say, that you know, why should people try to become God? They can enjoy more by being a servant of God. So the bhakti ras is more enjoyable than actually being the controller. Although being the controller, or being put in a position of control, bewilders us. Like we see sometimes you put people in a high position. I'm starting to remind. For example, like you had Sugriva who lost his position and then he was put in a high position and he forgot everything because he had surrounded by, you know, beautiful monkeys. Whatever it is. So he was surrounded by all the wealth that he had lost and he became bewildered and he forgot about Lord Ram's service. And Prabhupada also said that if you go to Lanka, then you'll become Ravana. In other words, if you take a position, Prabhupada was speaking metaphorically, if you take a position, then something happens to you. And I don't know if I should mention this, but in ISKCON we're dealing with this to a certain extent. There's a whole discussion about what sannyasi's position is in ISKCON. Because sometimes you find that someone takes sannyas and it may increase their false ego. Because for various reasons, they go to people's homes and everyone offers obeisances, touches their feet, gives them money for eating at their house. You know, when you're a grihastha, you have to pay money when you go to a restaurant. But when you're a sannyasi, you get paid for eating. So then the GBC has to pass so many resolutions about sannyasis and their money. Which is interesting. This is a big discussion going on now. I was reading it in the UK. How they have all these resolutions. You're welcome to come to the UK, but you have to follow the direction of the temple president and cooperate with the ISKCON authorities and don't keep any money. And so I was thinking that these resolutions are passed because people are doing the things that they're doing those things that are being prohibited. Like Prabhupada said in regard to the Muslims, he said that they have a rule that you're not allowed to have a relationship with your daughter. And Prabhupada said that means it's happening. So whenever you have a rule or have to pass a rule, that means people are doing the thing that you're trying to pass a rule against. So the point I'm making is that when someone gets a position in this world, they actually become bewildered by it. Janmaishvarya Shrutashashribir, Edavana Adapavana, wealth or a position of intelligence or any position in this world. Anyway, so getting back to this point. So being a servant of the Lord or servant of a servant of the Lord is more enjoyment than being the Lord. So Krishna wants to enjoy the ras, enjoy the taste, the nectar. Because what is the real enjoyment? The real enjoyment is not wealth. The real enjoyment is not opulence. The real enjoyment is having loving exchanges and being able to express your love in an unlimited way. Like Prabhupada said, that we have a loving propensity, and right now that loving propensity is being focused in such a way that it becomes stilted, it becomes frustrated. And so we want to express our loving propensity in an unlimited way. And only by being a devotee of Krishna can we express our loving propensity in an unlimited way. So this is the point. Krishna wants to do that. He wants to just express his loving propensity in an unlimited way for himself and enjoy in that way. So he takes on the mood of Srimati Radharani. And when he takes on the mood of Srimati Radharani, then he takes on her color, too. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya is called Gauranga. And Srimati Radharani is Gaurangi. So Gauranga, he golden one. So, anyway, we'll continue reading about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's esoteric reasons. And this final portion of chapter 4 is very interesting in this regard. So, e sava siddhanta guda kahite na yuyaya na kahile kena ihar anta nahi paya. All these conclusions are unfit to disclose in public, but if they are not disclosed, no one will understand them. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is a little reluctant to present these things to the people in general, because of the offense on chanting, that if you preach the glories of the Lord to those who are faithless, you know, it's an offense. So he's thinking, you know, these people will never understand this. But if I don't present it, then no one will understand it. And it won't be there. So he does this, taking a chance, so that this information will be here. Atevakahi nikichu karina nigud. Bhujabe rasika bhakta na bhujabe mood. Therefore I shall mention them, revealing only their essence so that the loving devotees will understand them, but fools will not. Ridaye tareye ye Chaitanya Nityananda. E sabha siddhante se vaibe ananda. Anyone who has captured Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda Prabhu in his heart will become blissful by hearing all these transcendental conclusions. I shall just read the English. All these conclusions are like a newly grown are like the newly grown twigs of a mango tree. They are always pleasing to the devotees, who in this way resemble cuckoo birds. The camel-like non-devotees cannot enter into these topics. Therefore, there is special jubilation in my heart. Now, let's explain that, because it's not that he's happy. Suffer, you know, suffer, you camel-like non-devotees. But he wants to protect, you know, Krishna's intimate pastimes from those who are offensive. You know, because, first of all, it's bad for those who can commit offenses. And secondly, it disturbs the Supreme Lord. Like when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was having his kirtan in the house of Shivas Thakur, they had a pure devotee guard at the door. In other words, they made sure that everybody who came in was an absolutely pure devotee. Nobody else was allowed in to Lord Chaitanya's, because it would have disturbed the internal, deep ecstasies that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was experiencing. And so I guess they had some, like, person there checking someone's credentials, you know. You have, you know, do you have, like, they card people at the bar or something like that? Are you a pure devotee? Like that. And sometimes when people who are not pure snuck in, like Srivas Thakur's mother-in-law, she was hidden behind the curtain, and Lord Chaitanya's ecstasy didn't manifest to the fullest extent. He was dancing, dancing, dancing. And then he said, I'm not feeling ecstasy today. Someone is here who shouldn't be here. And they said, we don't know anybody here. And they looked around and they found this old lady behind the curtains. And they just basically booted her out the door. And then Lord Chaitanya danced and he felt this ecstasy again. Another time, they invited in a Brahmin who lived only by drinking milk. They thought he's very pious. So he's qualified to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So same thing happened. Lord Chaitanya was dancing. He said, there's someone here who shouldn't be here. And they said, there's this Brahmin, he's very pious, Krishna conscious. And Lord Chaitanya said, you're not going to be Krishna conscious just by drinking milk and not eating anything else. And then this Brahmin offered his obeisances to Lord Chaitanya and fully surrendered. Then he became qualified. So that had a happy ending, that particular story. But the story of Srivastava Thakur, his mother-in-law, didn't have a happy ending. Poor mother-in-law. Anyway, she became saved ultimately because anybody who was in Srivastava Thakur's house, even the servant who used to be called Duki, was given the name Suki by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because she was related with Srivastava Thakur. So I'm sure that Srivastava Thakur's mother-in-law became a nice devotee eventually. So anyway, so we want to protect these intimate things. Just like if you have some intimate expression, you're revealing your mind. You don't just reveal it on Facebook. Hopefully not. Nowadays they do. But it's obnoxious. You know, you just reveal it to some confidential person. Like we said, guyamakyakti prichati. You reveal your mind in confidence because these are very personal things. I mean, you don't want everybody knowing every aspect of your personal life. Like many times when devotees say things to me, they say, please don't tell anyone. Don't mention it in Bhagavatam class. because it's personal. It's personal. And some people say, can I tell you a secret and you'll keep it? So anyway, these things are very personal. So that's why Krishnadas Kaviraj is saying the camel-like. Why is he using the expression camel? Because the camel enjoys things that are actually obnoxious, which is chewing on thorns and drinking its own blood. And it thinks this is very, very tasty. In the same way people who are enjoying sense gratification in the material world are, in one sense, drinking their own blood by damaging themselves spiritually as well as materially. In the next verse he says, for fear of them I do not wish to speak. But if they do not understand, then what can be happier in all the three worlds? In the same way, he's very happy that they don't understand. Therefore, after offering obeisances to the devotees for their satisfaction, I shall speak without hesitating. Once Lord Krishna considered within his heart, everyone says that I am complete bliss, full of rasas. All the world derives pleasure from me. Is there anyone who can give me pleasure? One who has 100 times more qualities than me could give pleasure to my mind. One more qualified than me is impossible to find in the world. But in Radha alone, I feel the presence of one who can give me pleasure. Although my beauty defeats the beauty of 10 million cupids, although it is unequaled and unsurpassed, and although it gives pleasure to the three worlds, seeing Radharani gives pleasure to my eyes. The vibration of my transcendental flute attracts the three worlds, but my ears are enchanted by the sweet words of Srimati Radharani. Although my body lends fragrance to the entire creation, the scent of Radharani's limbs captivates my mind and heart. Although the entire creation is full of different tastes because of me, I am charmed by the nectarian taste of the lips of Srimati Radharani. Although my touch is cooler than 10 million moons, I am refreshed by the touch of Srimati Radharani. Thus, although I am the source for the happiness of the entire world, the beauty and attributes of Srimati Radharani are my life and soul. In this way, my affectionate feelings for Srimati Radharani may be understood, but on analysis, I find them contradictory. My eyes are fully satisfied when I look upon Srimati Radharani, but by looking upon me, she becomes even more advanced in satisfaction. So Krishna's dealing with this contradiction right now, which is really interesting. The flute-like murmur of the bamboos rubbing against one another steals Radharani's consciousness. She thinks it to be the sound of my flute, and she embraces a tamal tree, mistaking it for me. I have thus gotten the embrace of Sri Krishna, she thinks, so now my life is fulfilled. Thus she remains immersed in pleasing Krishna, taking the tree in her arms. When a favorable breeze carries to her the fragrance of my body, She is blinded by love and tries to fly into that breeze. When she tastes the betel chewed by me, she merges in an ocean of joy and forgets everything else. Even with hundreds of mouths, I could not express the transcendental pleasure she derives from my association. Seeing the luster of her complexion, after our pastimes together, I forget my own identity and happiness. The sage Bharata has said that the mellows of lover and beloved are equal, but he does not know the mellows of my Vrindavan. The happiness I feel when meeting Radharani is 100 times greater than the happiness I get from meeting others. My dear auspicious Radharani, your body is the source of all beauty. Your red lips are softer than the sense of immortal sweetness. Your face bears the aroma of a lotus flower. Your sweet words defeat the vibrations of the cuckoo, and your limbs are cooler than the pulp of sandalwood. All my transcendental senses have been overwhelmed in ecstatic pleasure by tasting you, who are completely decorated by beautiful qualities. This one, the Lalita Madhava. Her eyes are enchanted by the beauty of Lord Krishna, the enemy of Kamsa. Her body thrills with the pleasure at his touch. Her eyes are always attracted to his sweet voice. Her nostrils are enchanted by his fragrance, and her tongue hankers for the nectar of his soft lips. She hangs down her lotus-like face, exercising self-control only by pretense, but she cannot help showing the external signs of her spontaneous love for Lord Krishna. Considering this, I can understand that some unknown mellow in me controls the entire existence of my captivator, Srimati Radharani. I am always eager to taste the joy that Radharani derives from me. In spite of various efforts, I have not been able to taste it, but my desire to relish that pleasure increases as I smell its sweetness. I've appeared in the world to taste mellows. I shall taste the mellows of pure love in various ways. I shall teach devotional service, which springs from the spontaneous love of the devotees, by demonstrating it myself with my pastimes. But these three desires have not been satisfied, for one cannot enjoy them in a contrary position. Unless I accept the luster of the ecstatic love of Sri Radhika, these three desires cannot be fulfilled. Therefore, assuming Radharani's sentiments and bodily complexion, I shall descend to fulfill these three desires. In this way, Lord Krishna came to a decision. Simultaneously, the time came for the incarnation of the age. At that time, Sri Advaita Acharya was earnestly worshipping him. Advaita attracted him with his loud calls. First, Lord Krishna made his parents and elders appear. Then Krishna himself, with the sentiments and complexion of Radhika, appeared in Navadvip like the full moon from the womb of Mother Sachi, which is like the ocean of pure milk. Meditating on the lotus feet of Srila Rupa Goswami, I thus explain the sixth verse. I can support the explanation of these two verses, that's verse 5 and 6 of the first chapter, with Srila Rupa Goswami's verse. And this is also an explanation of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. And I'll read the Bengali of this. Is this Bengali? Aparam kashyapi panaye jana vrindashyakutuku rasa stomam hrutva maduram upabhoktam kamapiya rucham swam ava vredyutim iha tadiyam aprakatayan sadevas chitanya kritir atitaram na kripayatu. Our Lord Krishna desired to taste the limitless nectarian mellows of the love of one of his multitude of loving damsels, Sri Radha. And so he has assumed the form of Lord Chaitanya. He has tasted that love while hiding his own dark complexion with her effulgent yellow color. May Lord Chaitanya confer upon us his grace. So this is this third verse of the second Chaitanyashtaka of Srila Rupa Goswami's Stavamala. Thus the auspicious invocation, the essential nature of the truth of Lord Chaitanya, and the need for his appearance have been set forth in these six verses. So that's the information from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then I'll tell a story from the Chaitanya Mango about Lord Chaitanya's appearance. That once upon a time, many, many years ago, Narada Muni was feeling a lot of compassion for the conditioned souls in Kali Yuga. He's always feeling compassion for the conditioned souls. So he went to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He went to actually to see Krishna, sorry. He went to see Krishna in Dwarka to express his mood of compassion. And when he saw Krishna, Krishna revealed his form as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when that occurred, Rukmini started crying. And the reason she was crying, that she understood that Krishna would come down and he would take the mood of Radha and she would be separated from him. And at that point, Narada Muni, understanding this, flew to Shiva, and he told Lord Shiva about this, he told Brahma about this, and Brahma started quoting Shastra, proving that Lord Chaitanya is the appearance of Krishna in the Kali Yuga. And then Narada went to the residence of Brahmaloka and the other heavenly planets and told all the residents to appear to help Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his pastimes. Because whenever the Lord appears, he doesn't appear alone. Just like Prabhupada said, an important man never goes anywhere alone. He has his entourage. So Krishna comes with his entourage. Similarly, in the pastimes of Lord Ram, before Lord Ram appeared, the demigods were told to either expand themselves or appear themselves or have children who were monkeys. And the reason they were told to have children who were monkeys or appear as monkeys is because Ravana had gotten the benediction that he would not be killed by demigods or demons or any great personality like that. But he didn't get the benediction that he wouldn't be killed by human beings or animals. So therefore, he had to be killed by human being, or the Lord appeared as a human being, and monkeys. And then, then Narada went to Goloka Vrindavan, and he saw Lord Chaitanya in Goloka Vrindavan. So that's one story in the Chaitanya Mangala. Another story is, because illustrates one important aspect of Lord Chaitanya's movement, which is prasadam distribution. Like Prabhupada said, that this Krishna consciousness movement is kitchen religion. So practically speaking, these are the two most important things, that chanting the holy names. Of course, we have book distribution, which is, Prabhupada said, extremely important, but that's part of chanting the holy names. You cannot separate book distribution from chanting the holy names. In fact, Prabhupada called it the Brihat Mridanga. And that came from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And when Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur installed deities, in many cases he put the printing press right next to the deities to show how important that the printing press was equivalent, basically, to the deity worship. So getting to the point is that prasadam distribution also is very, very important. Prabhupada very much stressed that, actually more than Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I guess because people in India who he was preaching to were generally eating prasadam anyway, or have their little altars in the house, whereas people in the West, they were definitely not eating prasadam. I remember when I joined the movement, the first time I ate prasadam, before I joined the movement, the first time I ate prasadam, it was just like exploded in my mouth. You know, not, it didn't have explode literally, but the taste buds exploded, because it was just something so different than I ever ate before, and I really couldn't control how much I ate. And it wasn't just because it was sweet balls and halva and pakoras and all that other stuff. It was just like so much different and so tasty. As Lord Chaitanya says, the taste of prasadam has the lotus, the saliva of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is nectarian. It was so tasty, I just couldn't control myself. And, you know, generally devotees in the beginning, they overate. And I remember after Sunday feast, the devotees would be lying on the floor, quoting Prabhupada's statement that if you overeat, you have to lie on your left side, not your right side. Because your right side has your liver. You know, the liver is what's being overstressed by overeating. And so we would say, well, we're following Prabhupada's instructions. You know, we have to eat up to the neck, you know, all that. But it was uncontrollable. So therefore, an important part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is distribution of Mahaprasad. So here's the story from the Chaitanya Mangal. Once upon a time, Narada Muni, he wanted to get some Mahaprasad. I guess previous to that, maybe he was forbidden to get it or something. But he wanted to get directly from the Lord's plate. So he actually started to serve Lakshmi. And he served her for 12 years. And after 12 years, she said, all right, whatever you want. I mean, this is a common theme in the Vedic literatures where someone does some austerity and they get a blessing and they ask for something that the person who is going to give the blessing either can't give or doesn't want to give or has been prohibited from giving. Like you see, Ravana first asked for immortality, and Lord Brahma said, can't do that, so ask for something else. So in the same way, Narada Muni, he asked for the Lord's direct remnants. And Lakshmi had been previously told by the Lord not to give any remnants from his plate. You know, I guess the Lord ate everything on his plate, or at least Lakshmi ate the remnants that were there. So she was caught in the, as they say, the horns of a dilemma. That she had promised Narada to give him whatever he wanted. And at the same time, she had the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So she became very morose. She went to Narayan, Krishna, and Krishna said, what's the problem? And she said, you know, I made this promise to Narada Muni, and I also got your order. And he said, all right, this time, you know, just be careful what benedictions you give. But this time, when I'm not looking, I take some of the Mahaprasadam and give it to Narada Muni. So she snuck it out when the Lord wasn't looking, even though he knew what was happening. And she gave it to Narada Muni, and Narada Muni just ate everything on its plate. And he started dancing in ecstasy, jumping up and down, Jai, I've gotten this Mahaprasadam. So then Lord Shiva saw him. And then Lord Shiva said, what are you dancing for? And Narada Muni said, I got Mahaprasadam. And Lord Shiva said, why did you save any for me? You know, I'm your brother. And, you know, I'm a Vaishnava. And so Narada Muni said, well, I forgot. You know, the prasadam was so tasty, I ate everything on my plate. But then he looked and there was a little bit of prasadam under his fingernail. And then he gave it to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva started dancing in ecstasy. And basically the universe was getting a little tipsy. When Lord Shiva starts dancing, then everyone thinks it's the Tandava Nritya, the dance at the time of the cosmic dissolution. And demigods got upset, and they said to Parvati, you've got to stop this, you know, you're the only one who can stop him. And so Parvati, Durga, stopped Lord Shiva. And she said, and he said, why did you stop me? I was dancing in ecstasy. And she said, I understand that. But why were you dancing in ecstasy? And he said, because I got Mahaprasadam. And she said, did you save anything for me? I'm your wife. And he said, you're the material energy. In other words, you're Maya. So, material energy. And of course, another name of Durga is Vaishnavi. She's actually a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So she got really upset and she started performing austerities. I'm going to make it so that the Lord distributes Mahaprasadam to everybody. Because Durga is our mother, in a real sense. She's the mother of everybody in the material world. And so because of that, the prasadam is distributed, first of all, by Lord Jagannath. Like if you go to Jagannath Puri, there's Jagannath Puri, you get Mahaprasadam. And then to everybody by Lord Chaitanya's movement. Mm. And then, so this is some of the events that preceded the appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as we mentioned before, had his associates appear in other lands other than holy places to give mercy to those particular personalities, to those particular areas of people who lived in that area. And so, at the same time, in Navadweep, people were actually devoid of devotional service, and most people were materialistic, except for Dvaitacharya and a few others. Hmm. And Srivas Thakur, of course, and his brothers, like Sriram, they would have kirtans, and people didn't like this very much. In fact, many times they threatened to call the Kazi and have Srivas Thakur and his house thrown into the Ganges River. Hmm. There are many, many attempts like that. And Dvaitacharya, he got so upset seeing the atheistic, materialistic nature of people. He said, I'm going to force Krishna to appear. Because he understood that in this age of Kali, it was absolutely necessary for Krishna personally to appear. Because the people were just so fallen, other incarnations wouldn't work. And that, in other ages, you know, it just took a few bows and arrows to kill people, and then everybody else got happy. But in the age of Kali, practically speaking, everybody has a demon in his heart and a devotee, you know, mixed, sort of a mixed thing. Or Kalo Shudra, some about everybody Shudra in Kali Yuga. So it requires some special appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dvaita said, I'm going to force Krishna to appear, and if he doesn't appear, because Dvaitacharya is Sadashiva Mahavishnu, and he also has the weapons of Vishnu, like the club in the Sudarshan Chakra. So he said, if he doesn't appear, I'm going to manifest forearms and kill everybody. So he was threatening the Lord. He was threatening. Of course, Advaita is non-different from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Advaita chuta nari ananta rupa madhyam purana prasham navi yovanam cha. And so then Advaitacharya started worshipping the Ganges. And he worshipped Krishna with the Ganges water and the tulsi leaves. And he understood that Krishna was going to appear. And then at the same time, Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi, they were married, and they had eight daughters that passed away. Eight girls who were born to them, and they passed away shortly after birth. And finally, their one son, Vishwarup, was born. And Vishwarup is considered to be an incarnation of Balaram and Nityananda. And this is the case that when before the Lord appears, Sankarshan or Nityananda has to make it a appropriate place for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So at that point, Vishwarup was born. Vishwarup manifested his activities as a pure devotee of the Lord, as Lord Nityananda. It's an expansion of Lord Nityananda. And then Sachi Devi became pregnant with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when she became pregnant with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Advaitacharya, understanding that the Lord was in the womb, he went to her house. He established a house in Navadweep, right next to Lord Chaitanya's house, which is called the Advaita Bhavan, right next to Srivas Thakur's house, too, which is Srivasanga. And he began to worship Sachi Devi, smearing sandalwood pulp on her womb. You know, the outside, actually not inside, obviously, but on the stomach. And he circumambulated her, and everyone thought he was crazy. Because, you know, obviously, if you go to someone's house and you smear sandalwood pulp on someone's wife's stomach and then you circumambulate them and offer obeisances, they're like, well, this is wild. But he understood that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there. And the demigods also were appearing and glorifying the Supreme Lord when Sachi Devi was pregnant with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And finally, in 1486, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. So I think that's all we have time for this morning. This evening, we'll talk about more of, I guess, Baby Nimai's pastimes, which we have quite a few of. Many, many pastimes there. It'd be nice if we had some plays on this, but I don't think anybody's prepared any plays. So any questions or comments? We're supposed to greet the deities in 1 minute. Questions, comments, arguments? Yes. I don't remember that story. I heard it once. But there was some reason for that. The new outfit today, right? Very nice.